Hello, this is Les Brown, Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show. Listen, continue to listen, and you'll discover your greatness.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey there, it's David, and welcome to the show. I am broadcasting all the way from my mobile little recording studio in Perth, Australia. And I've got a little croaky in my voice, as you can hear, as we had a beautiful night last night. I want to thank Nick and Eve for just a beautiful meal, great evening. Hanging out with friends. The meal was astounding, just so good. A pomegranate and leek salad with chickpea. I can't remember everything was in it, but it was so delicious. And then lamb done on the barbecue. Oh, I can still taste it. With, of course, a little red wine, lots of laughter, and some other good friends. So, yeah, what a great night. So thank you, Nick and Eve. Today, though, I've got an amazing guest, and I want to start with a quote by Deepak Chopra. He says, "Each of us is a unique strand in the intricate web of life and here to make a contribution." And today's guest is going to give us an opportunity to truly to get into contribution, is to really sort of help and be a part of something that's so much bigger than one individual person. And has the real possibility to impact the world in a significant way. And you can get to play. So I'm really, really excited about that. Imagine linking arms with the likes of Eckhart Tolle and Robert Friedman, and Peter Fonda, people who are involved in this project. And I just think you're going to be really surprised and really excited that there's a way that you can get to bring a very, very powerful message to life. In saying that, you know, I was thinking back to when I first started training, and I went to a program where the trainer that was training me said, "Look, you know, what we need to do is we need to get you sort of out your comfort zone so far so you can never go back in it." And so I had to perform in front of a live audience of 250 people, and I was told to sort of come up with something that would stretch me. And so I sang a song which involved wearing 6-inch high heels, fishnet stockings, a long black wig and makeup, and I sang a cappella. And I was thinking about because this guy that's coming on, my guest, is not only a friend of mine, he's an amazing movie producer, and this was one of those cult movies that inspired me. And here's a song from that before we get going, so I hope you enjoy it. But think of me strutting my stuff around the stage, singing to this, then you'll know why I'm as crazy as I am. And by the way, if you're brand new, listen to the show. We are 222 shows in, and welcome you. There's so much great stuff to go and sort through and look at, and you're going to find your own swing within this community. There's something for everyone. There's a little goofy. There's deeply spiritual. There's money. There's whatever you want. Leadership. You'll find it all. It's going to take you a little bit of time to figure out, you know, your particular swing. Or you may be like some of our students who listen to everything. They just love it, the variety. I appreciate all of the wonderful reviews that were left on iTunes. Australia, we've been number one in Australia all week long. And I think we had about 65 reviews come up on the Australian site all in one night. So thank you for everyone who did that. That's really cool. So sit back, listen to the song, and imagine me. I'm 6'3" with 6-inch heels. That would make me almost 7 feet tall, singing a cappella this song to break through my own comfort zone and take my life and my training to the next level.
Much of a man, but a lot of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
So with that being said, I know my guest will smile when he hears this particular song, because as beautiful as a person he is. He has tremendous range, tremendous heart, tremendous courage to really bring to life things that some of us just only think about. And I'm really, really excited the fact that you get to not only hear him, but get the opportunity to play with him and really sort of help contribute at a very, very high level. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the wonderful Barnard Mix.
You know, like I say, I'm always incredibly excited, and today this is wonderful because, you know, the show, we explore so many types of creativity, but when I think of creativity, I think of this guy, and there's something about this wonderful personality, and I'm so glad that, you know, we're early in our relationship, but there's something about when I'm around him, how great you feel. He has that sort of essence about him. So Barnett, welcome to the show.
Man, I am so glad to be with you. I wish I was with you up there in person, up there on the lake in BC, but it's not so bad down here either in Southern California.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, I was just looking out your window there, and it's, you know, you're 40 feet from the ocean. What is it like to live 40 feet from the water, the ocean there, great surfing? I mean, it's just a beautiful part of the world. I mean, do you wake up in the morning and just stagger out there and dive right in?
I used to. Many years ago, I did that. And right now, I'm very aware of how alive the world is living here, how dynamic it is. There's dynamism. There's animism. It does not mirror a world that's static. I used to think when I was a young guy that I understood stuff and that I had certain beliefs and that I, you know, that I had it tucked in and that I had a handle on the way of the world. And when you live in nature that is as wild as it is out here, it reminds you every moment that you cannot outthink life. And that everything is in flux and everything is changing so quickly, it keeps you in humility.
Do you think the creative soul, like you are we drawn to this type of environment? I mean, could you imagine yourself living in an apartment right downtown, or do you have to be sort of in that, sort of attached to nature where the creativity flows? I mean, or do you find it easy either place?
I've done it both places. I used to live in Manhattan and 20th and Park, and, you know, that was pretty cool. But I have to tell you there, and I know lots of folks whose creativity thrives on that sort of input. Mine, at this point in my life, it's important for me to know that I am more than my thinking. And that I am more than the wild cascade and parade of thoughts that go marching through my head at all times. And when I look around at nature, on one side, as we said, is that wild ocean. On the other side are these mountains. The mountains are so still and so quiet. Nature is not trying to figure things out. Nature is not trying to kind of look for plan B. It's not trying to do strategy. It's not trying to outthink things. There's a stillness in there that is so centering, and it allows me to drop in to a place that is almost, you know, I think of it as pregnant with all sorts of possibilities. It allows me to fall in love with ideas and feelings and thoughts that are even unborn yet. That only comes from being in the stillness of nature for me. I don't get that in the city.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. So let's talk about this creativity piece because, you know, you're a film producer. I mean, how do you describe you? I mean, it's easy for me to describe you, but describe, if someone says, hey, what do you do? how do you describe it?
I write, I direct, I produce, I write books. I have a new book coming out called The Book of Doing and Being. I describe myself now as a path bender. What the heck is that you're thinking, right? Your listeners are like scratching their heads, but
I feel like I should play some music right there.
Exactly.
The path bender.
I'm a path bender. Yeah, it's like come along the golden hind. We set off for a horn. I think of myself as somebody who is looking to move the path that we're all on, to bend it a little bit, 1 or 2 degrees to the left, to the right. If I can move the path even an inch left or right, then before long, we're all headed in an entirely different direction. So there are lots of, there's so much that is beautiful and good and true in the world, and there are some very big challenges. And these challenges are not going to be met by the same thinking and the same kind of creativity that we that created them. We're going to have to access entirely new creative possibilities. And so to the degree that we can bend off the well-traveled path, we will be really well-served.
But, I mean, obviously, you know, being in movies and producing and living in California, I mean, obviously there is so much of that, you know, that plastic front and, you know, where money sort of rules. And here you are, you know, with this deep sense of consciousness. Was that something, did you ever lose sight of that along the way? Did you ever get sort of caught up in the sort of the stardom of the kind of work you do? Or were you always able to keep a steady hand?
Well, two things. One is that from the time I was 4 years old, I felt that connection. I absolutely knew that the world operated very differently from the way that I was being trained, educated, from the way my parents were teaching me, my schools teaching, our religions were teaching, from the way the television and entertainment, the songs that we heard. They were shoehorning me in, not because they were bad or wrong, but I was being shoehorned into what I call a structured imagination. My wild and woolly imagination was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I was looking for safety out of status and success and power, as many of us do. So the second part of that question is, yes, I did get seduced, but it wasn't so much that I was seduced by the plastic. I was seduced by the idea that if I had a big hit, I could squirrel away enough acorns for some winter that I was expecting, that I could outthink life, that I could have some kind of retirement fund, that I could finally be safe, that I could finally rest easy. I got seduced into that one. And again, you know, we were talking earlier about what is the big give back of living out here in nature. And you know, and I know you, there's a reason you live where you live. And I wouldn't bet against it being too far off the same point I'm making. It just keeps you sane. Nature is not saving acorns for the Great Depression. It's not worrying about retirement. It's very much in the moment, and it all seems to work. So I'm not an advocate for saying, well, you know, let's stop planning for the future. There's a balance there. But I did get absolutely seduced into a quest to control life in order to feel safe. And that's a bad bargain. I don't have to.
Do you think running after all those acorns made you a little nuts?
Exactly. That's really good. We should write a book. That's really good. You are going to get nuts.
Yeah, it was funny though, isn't it? Really, the human species is meant to be the enlightened one. And you know, you can't imagine a squirrel sitting on the edge of a pond somewhere, looking into its reflection, thinking, "Geez, I'm ugly. I don't deserve nuts." It's only the human species that's evolved that far where they can hate themselves so much, look into the pond, thinking they're not worthy of stuff.
That's exactly it. And then you get the squirrel sitting in the side of the pond with a massive freaking pile of acorns, saying, "How can I turn these into complex derivatives?"
Oh dear. Anyway,
it's not enough, right? Because it's not a big enough file.
Exactly. Exactly.
One thing, David, you mentioned, like, here's this squirrel, and they're looking into the pond, you know, and they're looking at themselves. That sort of narcissist, that narcissist, I can't even say it.
Narcissistic.
The narcissistic thing. I once read something someplace about the real meaning. Somebody had a take on what they thought was the real meaning of the narcissist myth. And I thought it was fantastic. And in their take, Narcissus was this huntsman, and he was out, and he's out in the wood, and he finds this clear lake, and he looks down, and he's lonely. He's so lonely, and he looks down at this lake, and he sees this reflection, but he doesn't know it's his reflection. And he falls in love, not because he's vain, which is the way we hold it, not because he's self-absorbed, which is the way we hold it. He falls in love because he sees there someone that is so beautiful and so true. And when he reaches out to touch it, it shimmers and disappears, and he is filled with the ache of being separated from what is beautiful and what is true. And the tragedy of the story is that he doesn't know it's him. That's a much more satisfying tale.
I like it.
And we are all, in that sense, we don't see our own beauty. I'm not talking about vanity. We just don't see how much we matter, how good we are. We don't see that we make a difference. We don't see what is important about us. We don't see what is valuable and what is valued by others. And so we are like this sort of healthier version of this. I just like this version, that story, version of the narcissist story so much better than the one we're used to, which is
the vanity part, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, but I think what came up to me as you were telling that story was, you know, here you are as a movie producer and writer. But if I just look at your movies for a second, because I know you're interested in a really fascinating project right now, which I'm really excited about. But, you know, when you get to look through that lens and you look at life, that lens must centralize what's happening to give you a very unique perspective on frame by frame, moment by moment, sort of the interaction of people and the exploration of beauty or the exploration of the opposite, I suppose. But I mean, is that one of your favorite mediums to create for film, or where do you find your happiest?
Well, the reason that I like creating for film is because I may be wrong about this, but I think that we learn most by what we see others, by how we see others behaving. When we see behaviors that we aspire to, they inspire us. When we see behaviors that that are more effective, we emulate them. When we see behaviors that are less effective, you know, sometimes we gain some wisdom out of that. But we learn much more effectively by seeing things modeled than hearing about them. You know, when you were a small boy, David, if your childhood was anything like mine, my dad used to say all kinds of things. But there was a sort of a gap between his highest aspiration. Don't ever lie. Don't always tell the truth. That's what he would tell me. But I would sometimes see him bending it a little bit, you know, and I would hear things like, you know, all's fair in love and war, and, you know, all of these sorts of things that what you say, what you think, what you do is much more revealing than what we claim as truth.
Was there's that great saying that says, I can't hear what you're saying because your actions speak so loudly. I mean,
and that's fantastic. Yeah. It's like, or take my advice. I'm not using it.
I gotta write that one down. I'm gonna steal that one.
Yes, brother. So when you see these behaviors in ways that we don't have any other medium except filmed entertainment, whether it's movies or television, there's some great television happening now. You see behaviors. These behaviors, they do not lie. We all are able to penetrate through to the truth of who somebody is by their actions. Shakespeare once said that action is character. And it took me many, many years to discover the truth of that. And so for that reason, and that reason only, I love movies.
Tell me about one of your favorite movies. I know you've had, you know, you've had obviously some success with your work, but you know, as far as your personal success, the thing that you're most proud of and the stuff that you've done as far as movies, if we stay in that genre for a while, what's been some of the highlight moments as you've created?
Well, my favorite movie that I've made, and if anybody's aware of my of any of my work, they may be surprised, and I don't know who's aware of it, but in case my wife's listening, she may be surprised to know that my favorite personal work is a movie that I made for Lifetime Television. It wasn't even a theatrical movie. The theaters and the studios didn't want it. It was called Homeless to Harvard, and it was based on the true life story of Liz Murray, who was a girl at, who grew up in the Bronx to drug-addicted, HIV-infected parents. And by the time she was a young teenager, her mother was dead and her father living in a home and she herself living on the streets. And she realized as a young teen that she was doomed. She was going to have the same life unless she somehow got out of it. And so she got herself through high school, doing 4 years in two while living on the train, on the F train, and eating out of dumpsters, and got a scholarship to Harvard. And all along the way, people would say to her, well, you know, weren't you, wasn't it awful? Didn't you resent or did, how did you feel about your parents? And she would, you know, how do you feel about your life? What a terrible bunch of bad breaks. And she always said, even as a young girl, she said, when somebody's living on the streets, they don't have the indulgence. That's an indulgence. This kind of ability to blame or to feel like a victim is an indulgence that will take you out so fast. So that is an indulgence of a complacent or entitled or middle-class life. The, what is negative about middle-class life? Not she wasn't making a sweeping statement. And I thought that is the most inspiring, powerful, inspirational story of a person that came to such deep wisdom all by herself, who understood that the present is not the result of the past, and that by a shift in her being state, as well as her thinking state, but who she, how she held herself as a human being, by shifting that, she could and would shift everything, and that she had no room for self-pity. She understood how toxic that was. So I learned a lot from her. I found the story. I was inspired by her, and I cared enough about it to make a movie about it. And it was nominated for 3 Emmys, including Best Movie. And we didn't win Best Movie, but I won the great, you know, I had the great prize of being involved in that project and shepherding it. So that is my favorite of everything that I've done.
I find that really fascinating when I mean, because I love movies, and I'm kind of a bit of a weirdo in the sense that the Hollywood blockbuster really isn't my favorite thing. I mean, I'll sit and watch a Hollywood blockbuster, but I always feel like I can tell what's coming. I almost like have a crystal ball. I'm always guessing the plot. I love those movies that come along and they surprise me, and I'm so in the moment. I can't see what's coming because I'm so absorbed by the moment, maybe. So I see a lot of international films, or I watch films that are, I find them clever. I don't know. But typically what the distinguishing factor is, or across the board, is that they're based on a true story or based on life. Life is so fascinating, isn't it? I mean, isn't life, isn't that the best plot for a movie?
Life is everything. And then you have to have sort of the X-ray vision, as I know you do, because I know you pretty well. There's some X-ray vision that is involved. You know, you can look at life, and you can look at somebody's life on the surfaces of things, and then develop a little bit of insight and a bit of wisdom, and be able to have the super hearing and the supervision to be able to see, well, what is driving these behaviors? What are the underlying intentions here? What are the forces below the waterline here that are showing up in these kinds of behaviors? And as a film director, of course, that's gold, because the words that somebody says on a script mean nothing. I can hand you a line that says, Hi, David. It is great to see you. You look fantastic. And direct the actor to say it as though you're trying to seduce him. And so what has absolutely nothing to do with you look fantastic. Or I could direct the actor to say, say that in your secret agenda is to distract him while his house is being robbed. So when we begin to dip down below the surfaces of things, there is a complexity that is so enormous. And I think that's why, I agree with you, that's why it's so much more satisfying to see these independent movies and foreign films, because they are not constrained by the factory entertainment system to make a product that distracts. And some of them are really entertaining. I'm not down on that. But they're not as value added in terms of nutrition, heart building and mind building nutrition as the kinds of films you're talking about. They self select out of dealing with those kinds of complexities in favor of a numbers game, and it's very effective. It's made the entertainment business the preeminent export of the United States. And at the same time, it has in some way lowered eroded the values of the country. It has contributed to some of the more unhealthy, and there's a lot of inspiring competitive values, but there are some unhealthy competitive models around there. So it's been a mixed bag all in all.
Well, yeah, and I think that, yeah, I mean, it's become an educator, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of, I suppose there's a lot of responsibility, and I suppose that's where the social or the compassionate movie that you kind of seem drawn to. But before I go there, I want to go into that whole movie part, and I want to really talk about what's coming up for you. But I'm fascinated because I remember one time I was listening to you teach a program that we were both at, and we talked about creativity, and you were exploring that whole idea of creativity. And I wonder with people that, you know, this is broadcast in 175 countries. And I wonder when you talk about that, about people accessing their own creativity, do you have any sort of words or pearls of wisdom that someone can maybe sitting there right now? Because I hear it all the time. People say, well, I don't tell jokes, or yeah, I can't paint, or I can't dance. A lot of people are sort of invested in what they think they can't do. Do you feel that, does everyone have creativity, and do they just lack the sort of key to unlock it, or is it just sort of are they corralled out of it by the very way they're brought up? What is that?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, imagine that you're sitting with a friend, and the friend's got a blindfold on, and you take that friend to the most beautiful place on the planet. You take them to, you know, to New Zealand or Yosemite Valley or Kelowna outside your window. And, you know, they have a blindfold on, and you're describing to them the scene. And they're saying, well, I don't see anything. And you say, well, just, you know, you have a blindfold on. It's there, and you have the capacity to engage it, take off the blindfold. And then they say, well, how do I know I'll like it? How do I know I'll be any good at looking at it? How do I know I'll have a response? Well, take off the blindfold. The people, we are conditioned to keep that blindfold on. I mean, in my view, there's no such thing as an uncreative act. It is as creative an act. It's not very fulfilling, but it takes a lot of creativity to say, I have no creativity. There's not a function, there's not a thought, there's not an emotion that is not a – this is all a creative act. And because we go around reacting for the most part to outside stimuli, that's still a creative act. But we don't necessarily take off the blindfold and realize that my imagination can be wild and woolly, and that nothing uncreative exists. We're just not conditioned to look at the world that way or ourselves that way. But creativity is the only thing that is going on 24/7. Creativity is love's work, and it shows up in every moment of every activity. And you know, you're a really successful businessman. Creativity at this point in the development of the planet business itself may be, very well be. I suspect it is. I'd be hard pressed for anybody to convince me otherwise that business is the primary expression of creativity on the world today.
Yeah, and I agree. If we look now at what you do, as far as the sort of, you talked about your age a lot in the beginning, and you look so young, but I think you're like 112, right?
Exactly.
But what are you? You're in your 50s, right?
I just had my 60th birthday.
Yeah, and you probably look like you're 48. I mean, like on a good day, if we polish you up a little bit and give you a buff in, right? But you know, you look great. I know your wife looks like she's 20 years younger than she is. I mean, so you have this real, I always say, you know, when you look at people, their story's written on their faces. You can almost tell the story. But, you know, you're at this age where, you know, obviously we start hitting the 50s and 60s and we start making choices that are really important to us. And I get that sense with you is that, you know, there's a lot about this next chapter that is kind of almost like a higher calling. And maybe I'm wrong here, but this is just my take on it. And the sort of the projects that you're getting involved in are deeply meaningful. Is that a correct summarization, or am I kind of out to lunch?
You are 100% on it. I'm 100% on it. I'm at a place in my life. It's been over the last few years, I have realized that, you know, you begin life. I began life sort of living through the various woundings and tragedies that leave us in tatters, the disappointments. And then you move into another phase of life where, like Humpty Dumpty, you start to put yourself back together again, and you overcome all kinds of challenges and all sorts of obstacles. And, you know, you get the girl and you build the business and you get the job and you make the family and you put together a life. And, you know, in this country, I know we're all over being heard all over the world. In this country, that's referred to the highest expression of that. It's such a high value in this country. It's called the American dream. And it's so beautiful. And many stop there, you know, satisfied to have sought and to have achieved. But I've come to a place where, for me at least, there's more. I mean, do I really want to end my days? Would I want to look at a gravestone, to hover as some sort of spirit over a gravestone, and it's going to say, you know, he made a pretty good movie? You know, he drove a new car? I want it to say I made a difference. I want it to say I knew how to love. I knew how to give it. I knew how to receive it. I want it to say that people cared and that their lives felt better. That matters to me. And so I'm living in a part of my life that is a response to some kind of calling that's coming from really deep within me that inspires me to go way outside of what's comfortable and familiar to me. And in other ways, it is more comfortable and familiar to me than anything else. But it's certainly not necessarily it's absolutely not what drove me for most of my life. But it really is what my life is about now. How can I make a difference? How can I care more? And how can I contribute? And I started off talking about myself as a path bender. How can I bend that path? How can I bend it as much as I can using the gifts and the talents and the strengths, the relationships, the friendships, the love that I have, in order to bend it a little bit so that it is more fun, a little easier, a little brighter for anybody else that follows on, that comes afterwards.
Mm. I love that. You know what I want on my gravestone? Just a little side note. I had this put on my driver's license in England. You can write your last wishes on your driver's license if you're going to be a kidney donor. And I thought this was hilarious. It was going to say, "Now do you believe I'm sick?" I can imagine people walking through, because I mean, in England, you know, the graveyards are all so somber, and I could just imagine someone going through it and just like howling.
You borrowed one from me. I'm going to borrow that one from you.
There you go.
Can you believe me now?
Exactly. Let's talk about this project. I mean, you've got some of the most iconic people in the world who are known for compassion and joy and giving and purpose, who have kind of linked arms with you on the project you're just getting involved in. One of whom is one of my great heroes, the Dalai Lama. And he really changed my life when I met with him in Idaho, and just a beautiful example of unconditional love. But can you sort of lead us through the project you're engaged with right now, and really what your sort of goal outcome would be for the project?
Absolutely. So, well, I'm making a film called Milton's Secret, and Milton's Secret is based on it was originally a children's book written by Eckhart Tolle and Robert Friedman. And I looked at this book and I thought, I have a sense of how this can be a kind of a gritty movie, not just for children, but for families. And I thought this could really reflect a lot of what is going on in the world right now. So, you know, just to set it up, it's a story of a boy who's 11 years old, and this kid is stressed. You know, his parents, their marriage is coming apart. They have serious financial problems. He lives in a subdivision. Every fourth house is underwater or vacant or empty. He lives in a community that is in disrepair. People are wound up. Nobody is, like, smiling in the streets. They're leaning on their horns. Everybody is locked into their devices. They're on their cell phones. People don't communicate in the same way. Things are in disrepair. Nothing works quite the same. It's just there's homeless people every place. And he feels, this boy feels stressed. He's bullied at school, really stressed. And there's not his parents, they're loving him and the best they can. But they don't really have a tremendous insight as to their own problems, how lost they are in their own attempt to outthink life, their own attempt to try and figure out how to save their for themselves from their challenges. And so the boy is he's in some pain. His grandfather comes to visit, and his grandfather was played by Peter Fonda, Easy Rider. His grandfather was a lifelong U.S. Army medic, and as a younger man, he was wild, and he was a wild husband. He was a bad father. He was an unfaithful father. He caused a lot of pain, left a wake of a lot of pain, and he has a really troubled relationship with his boy's mother. But he's now about 80 years old, and as he got farther into his eldership, he began to discover certain things about being more present to the moment, less involved in what's going to be, less replaying the past, being more and more fully aware and more fully awake and more fully what Eckhart Tolle calls being in the now, what the Dalai Lama refers to as spontaneous right action. So he's very in the moment. And this boy witnesses a very different approach to the challenges of being alive by hanging around with his grandfather. So it's not a movie where anybody's doing any teaching or any talking. It's completely story-based. And it's not like it all ends fantastically. There's still lots of challenges at the end, but the boy does come through this with a sense of that there is a place of peace that gives him a much more powerful tool to deal with all the kinds of stresses that he's going through. And we can see ourselves in the mirrors of all these different characters. Maybe we can recognize some of the behaviors that we do, some of the places where we abandon people we love because our digital devices are a little more important, some of the places where we are less present in the world. So it's a movie about mindfulness, and it's a movie about compassion, because it shows it in a very appealing way, and there's nothing sweet about it.
But I think what I love about the project is the idea that it's truly everyone's story, right? I think in some regard, there's a relatability to everyone's journey. And I mean, you and I just talked about that with you, you know, hitting, you know, your 60th birthday and being at a part of your life where things change. There's a new perspective. And this guy's 80, having, you know, not been the most enlightened soul, but comes to a level of understanding where he can impart these things, right? I mean, so there's a tremendous relatability, I think, to all people, right?
That's exactly it. And that's why I loved it. And that's why Eckhart Tolle said, you know, when I originally spoke with him, I said, I have an idea how to do your book. And, you know, he has that way where he just sort of, you know, silently invites the yes. And so I went on and on. And then he said, well, you know, give it a try. Go ahead, give it a try. And if I approve, if it feels right, if it feels aligned to what matters to me, to the kind of spiritual teachings that are important to me, then then absolutely I'll encourage you to go to the next step. So it just kept going and going and going until one day, you know, this is a man who has sold millions and millions and millions of books and never promoted any of them and never did a book signing and never did, to the chagrin of his publishers, who I now know. And one day he's, you know, we were doing some shooting and I said, I'm going to do a little bit of shooting, put together a bit of a trailer for this movie. And he said, I'll be in your studio tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And, you know, I just got blown away. And that trailer is on a website that, you know, your listeners can go and look at. You can listen to what he has to say, why it matters. And I think it does matter, you know. We're living right now as we talk. Hopefully by the time our listeners hear this, this will be resolved. But as we speak now, the government of the United States has closed up shop now, going into its second week. They just closed up shop. And then you look elsewhere in the country and in the world, and there's disharmony and disruption everywhere, and violence everywhere, and stress is everywhere. And what is was once unthinkable is now commonplace. So what better time than now to offer a model for an entirely different way, without preaching, just show an entirely different way to respond to life, to respond to stress. And so this Peter Fonda character, he has discovered this over his long life, and he makes people feel seen. He makes them feel that they matter. He's not trying to fix everybody. And as a result, he gives them the space to be who they are and to feel what they're feeling and to feel that they matter and that they're heard. And that's all we ever really want. And then things suddenly, as a result of that, as the Dalai Lama might say, we then act in spontaneous right action. When we have character, when we have values that are aligned with our character, then in the moment, what is most beautiful and good and true about us comes forward spontaneously without having to do too much strategic thinking. And life unfolds miraculously the way nature unfolds. It's all, everything supports everything else. And we are more than nature because we're conscious. That allows us to put some intention behind it, to love one another, to make each other feel safe, seen, mattered, pleasured in the ways that are appropriate. So that's what this movie shows. And I'm very honored to have the support of the Dalai Lama Center and Eckhart Tolle. And one of the opportunities here was to make this movie in a way that does not have to shoehorn its message.
Kyle, let me talk about that a little bit before you go, because I think it's really important, is that this is something where people can be involved, and knowing that the message isn't going to be packaged for the mass audience. It's not going to be, which, you know, typically we talked about that a moment ago with the Hollywood blockbusters, you know, how a message can be You know, it has to be distorted for the masses. And truly what we're looking at around the world, which you just talked about, and I often talk about in my programs, it's crazy that we're, you know, in 2013 and there is so much destruction going on around the world that as a species, we haven't evolved into a place of joy and happiness, which I think we're all meant to be doing. You know, so many people are in a place of distress and stress and hatred and they haven't found that love of self. So there truly is that there's an aching in the world for new messages to be more mainstream, because the eyewitness news and the constant bombardment of negativity has taken its toll, and we're seeing it across the board. Everyone sees it. So by not accepting the sort of the big check from somebody to say, look, we'll do it, but do it my way. And to do it my way, we need this spin on it, because with this spin, it's going to have this type of outcome. This is something that can actually be, each person can get involved and help contribute to the making of the movie in a very unique way. I mean, did I catch that right?
Oh, so you expressed it so perfectly, so beautifully. That's absolutely so. The Dalai Lama Center, of course, has been stewarding values and ideas that have to do with compassionate living for a very long time. And they're not, as they say, you're not able to take these concepts of compassion and turn them into some sort of digestible, logical thing that you can just consume inside of a worldview that hasn't really opened its heart to compassion. And so these things have to take their own timing, and the timing seems to be right now to begin to. We've come to a place where we can begin not only to talk about things, but to show them. And there are things that, because we have things like crowdfunding, which allows an audience to be the messages they wish to see, to support the kinds of messages that they wish to see, in the same way that people support public broadcasting with their contributions in order to create the kinds of programming they wish. Well, that's also an expression of a certain kind of expansion, freedom of consciousness, where we can have an audience now that is more open to seeing models of what compassion looks like in action, and has a vehicle through which they can express their support directly in making a contribution to the making of that kind of movie, so that it does, so that the message can be created in a way that the audience expects to see it and to be served by it. Very different model. It's a very, very different model.
And I love the idea that each person, that depends on how they want to contribute, but there's different levels of contribution that all have a reward. And, the lowest level contribution, you get to see the script right away and start reading it and start to be embedded and involved in the process just by the very connection to the script, which is something you never see in advance. But there really is a way, and I'm going to let everyone know how they can play and get involved in this. But it really does, there's a level of ownership now in the creation process. Where someone says, yeah, you know what, this, I do stand behind this type of message. It's something I want my kids to be exposed to. It's a way that really can help, heal the planet and really give it a kick in the butt in some ways, because, it feels like it's spinning off axis just a little bit here. And I think of one of my favorite movies that I've watched in the last, probably last 4 or 5 years. I don't know if you saw it. It was The Untouchables. Or the Intouchables. I'm sorry, The Intouchables, right?
Just fabulous.
I cried, I laughed, but what a simple movie, and it was the love affair between these two men who, one was a quadriplegic and the other was this kind of delinquent. And I look at the beauty of these two characters. One is a billionaire and one's kind of a thief. And the impact that one soul can have on another at the highest level. And this was, again, based on a true story. and this beauty of those two personalities, not wanting a perfect world, but creating this perfect relationship where the best is brought out of both parties. Again, I just feel that these movies, they have a lasting effect. I still feel that movie inside of me. And this is like 8 months ago or 9 months ago that I watched it. But movies do have a lasting effect, right?
Well, they do. It's not simply because they make us feel good. Some movies make us feel good. Some movies make us feel not good at all. But a movie like The Untouchables, the movie like the kind of film that we're making with Milton Secret, it's what makes it powerful is that it's a story. These stories where characters meet big challenges. In the traditional model of films, they meet big challenges and they put their heads down and they butt up against those challenges and they bang into them like a footballer or like a gunslinger, and they try and subdue the frontier. They try and subdue the challenges and they bend the world to their will. That's most of the stories that we're used to, and certainly most of the films we're used to. And then there are movies like the one, like The Untouchables, and like Milton's Secret. That's a very different kind of movie. And this is a, this is new. This is almost, it's, I think it points to some sort of, maybe we're growing up, maybe we're evolving in real time here. These movies are different because big challenges are faced, and the characters, instead of putting their heads down and banging in and trying to dominate the world, they change inside. They go through internal changes, powerful internal changes. And as a result of going through these powerful internal changes, oftentimes, though not always, the outer world changes too. But what is more important is that the outer world doesn't necessarily have to change. The internal world of the character changes. And that is a profound freedom. When we see those kinds of entertainments, that kind of modeling, whether it's in entertainment or in life, we're changed forever.
Yeah. And inspired in a simple way. So, you know, with that being said, you know, we are getting toward the end of the show here, and I want to just sort of ask you, you know, if there's anything else you want to sort of add as far as the movie's concerned, then I have a final question for you. But is there anything we've missed as far as this and the fact that people can really get involved behind something where, you know, great minds like Eckhart Tolle and the Dalai Lama and so many other great people who have stood alongside and said, hey, listen, this is something that is worthy and worthy of everyone contributing, and everyone gets to play at whatever level that they can afford to play, but they can get to play. They can have and be part of a movement that says, hey, we want something new. We want a new message that's going to be around for our kids and our grandkids and something really valuable. But is there something I've missed along the line here?
I think you've absolutely beautifully covered it. The only thing that I would add to this is that we will absolutely be making this movie. Without question, we will be making this movie. The degree to which we are able to encourage the participation of supporters and of fans to co-creation, that's going to change the quality of the movie. It may allow us to have more freedoms, as we talked about earlier, and it'll allow us to have a direct dialogue with the people who are contributing. We will stay in touch with you, and we will be sending you messages. So I encourage you to go and look at the website, and there's all kinds of goodies there. And to support us, if your heart is moved to do so, you can do it for $1, and the sky is the limit. There's all kinds of treats and rewards for you if you do that. And if nothing more than going and looking and giving us a kind thought, that would be appreciated too. And there's lots and lots of good stuff on that site. And I think you'll enjoy looking at it. You can see that now at www.supportmiltonsecret.com. It's one word, supportmiltonsecret.com.
Awesome. So let me ask you a question then. Last question of the show. The show's called The Kick-Ass Life. Barnett, what's a kick-ass life to you?
I don't want to ever say that I came to a place in my life where I began to, where I knew that I was repeating old patterns, and in spite of knowing that, I continue to do that. To me, a kick-ass life is one that is in search of more and more freedom, more and more freedom from the past. As we said before, I don't believe that the present is the result of the past. And the more that I'm willing to take action in unfamiliar territory, to try something new, even though there's all sorts of internal resistances that shriek, oh my goodness, I could fail, I could be embarrassed, I could be humiliated, I could, there's that whole long list. When we move with courage in the spite of those voices, life gets bigger, it gets wilder, it gets woolier, it gets juicier, it gets more kick-ass.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're certainly kick-ass, my friend. I look forward to coming and sitting on that deck and soaking in that ocean waves, and I so appreciate you being on the show.
I love you, man. Come on down. We'll get a little surfing in.
There you go. Ciao.
Thank you.
Like I said, just a great, great individual and a great opportunity for us all to link arms and really help out. I want to, you think about this quote. It says, legacy is not what's left tomorrow when you're gone. It's what you give, create, impact, and contribute today while you're here that happens to live on. And so really think about that today. And I know it's easy to get busy, but, you know, there are so many levels that we can play at. So, you know, the idea that you're going to link arms with Eckhart Tolle and, you know, and these wonderful, wonderful people that are a part of this movie. It's just a real unique opportunity to get a whole crowd of us doing something together. I'm really excited about it. Excuse that. That was something coming through on my computer. With that being said, let's follow the old Rocky Horror Picture Show. And as you, again, think of me dancing around on stage, breaking through my own little comfort zone, moving my life to another level. Here's another great song from that movie.
Doing the time!
Time Warp, and again, I want to remind you, thank you. Thank you, everyone that has gone on to Facebook and become a part of the community. You can just join us, David on Facebook.com. If you want the show notes and the links for today's show, thekickasslife.com/show224, which is the show number. So /224. Can you believe it? 224 shows. So again, new people, scout around. You're going to find something you love in there. With that being said, I really, really, really appreciate the amount of reviews that we had in Australia this last week. It's crazy. We've been number one in Australia for the entire week. Number one on iTunes for the entire week. And there were 60 or 70 reviews in one day. And I just want to say thank you so, so much for all of you that have taken the time to do that. That does, it pushes the show into visibility, which allows us to reach more people. And, you know, this is about helping impact the world, change lives, change people's perspectives and change the way they view the world. That's why this movie is such a great idea to get involved in. Because, again, there are so many negative messages out there. It's important that we get the positive ones out there. So I want to say thank you to Happy Suze. Happy Sue, she says, great listening from Australia. Mitch Sanders, he just wrote The Kick-Ass Life, 5 stars. We've got Holly, 1986. Amazing stuff, she says. Mind-blowing from Ashy, 1801. And one more. We've got loads and loads, but I just want to say thank you to these people that have gone on to iTunes, left a review. This is Priceless by Robin and Greg A. Robin and Greg A. Five stars again. They've written some really beautiful things about what they've got from the show and from the training. So, again, thank you so much for that. I look forward to linking arms with you and helping Barnett bring this dream to life. And I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.